workshop for the Elk River TMDL.
Good day, members of the board. Good afternoon. My name is Adona White. I have been the staff person assigned to the Elk River Sediment TMDL, and I'll be updating you on the status of that project. And first, I'd like to start by walking through the EOSR and its attachments. After the green sheets of the EOSR, Attachment A is the draft staff report, chapters 1 and 2, the introduction and problem statement. Attachment B is a framework of what staff is recommending for the implementation program associated with this Elk River TMDL. And Attachment C is a summary of the comments received during our scoping period. And I'll be referring to these during the presentation. And for my presentation, I'm going to start with a brief background on our existing sediment water quality standards, because those are the standards to which we're relating the Elk River conditions to. Go over briefly elements of the draft staff report and update you on a public workshop scheduled in Eureka in November, and an overall update on the schedule. And then we'll have time for questions from the board and any comments from the public. And as you know, Elk River was listed as sediment impaired on the 303D list in 1998 due to impaired water supplies, degraded fisheries habitat, and an increased incidence of flooding due to channel changes. And the TMDL development that's currently underway. We've verified the impairments. We're developing our recovery strategy and drafting the staff report, which will support the action plan that would be brought to you for consideration for amendment into the basin plan. These are the currently designated beneficial uses of water in Elk River. You've seen these before. They're in Table 2-1 of the basin plan. In addition, staff is recommending that three additional existing beneficial uses be designated in Elk River, including flood peak attenuation, flood water storage, wetland habitat, and water quality enhancement. And while we're proposing the basin plan amendment, it would be good to update that table as well. With respect to our sediment water quality objectives, the applicable ones that we have specify conditions that will not cause nuisance or adversely affect beneficial uses with respect to concentration of suspended material, settleable material that could result in bottom deposits, suspended sediment load and concentration. Suspended sediment load and discharge rate. And additionally, we have a numeric objective for turbidity that specifies not increasing turbidity levels beyond 20% over naturally occurring background conditions. And we have two existing prohibitions with respect to sediment. For discharge and threatened discharge of sediment in amounts deleterious to beneficial uses. Now, these prohibitions only apply to logging, construction, and associated activities, and not the other land use activities. And I bring this one up in particular because I'm going to refer to it as part of our proposal for the implementation program. We have an addition to this. And lastly, Porter Cologne defines nuisance conditions as anything that meet these three criteria, and that's that interrupts the free use of property, affects a community, and is as a result of waste discharge. And in Elk River, the flooding conditions constitute a nuisance. And with that quick run through the existing sediment water quality standards, now I'm going to go over some of the information in the draft staff report. And like I said, attachment A includes the intro and problem statement drafts, but the source analysis and implementation chapters, they're under development, and you have not yet been provided with those. Now, Elk River is comprised of two main forks, North Fork and South Fork, a valley through which the main stem runs, and then Martin Slough, which drains off the backside of the city of Eureka, and the bulk of it is just beyond the Eureka city limits. And generally speaking, Elk River has steep topography. These darker colors represent the steeper slopes, with the blue colors generally being pretty flat. In March of 2005, the Regional Board commissioned the collection of LIDAR data, which generated high-resolution topographic data, an accuracy of 1 meter versus the former 30-meter USGS data, and that's produced, and it also could penetrate the canopy, so it's produced a very accurate bare earth topographic representation of the watershed. And based on that, those data, I've used those extensively in our analyses, and approximately half of the Elk River watershed has slopes greater than 35%, which is often used as a management threshold of slope gradient. And generally speaking, Elk is comprised of weak geologic formations. About three quarters of the watershed is made up of either the Wildcat, but this kind of darker tan, the Hooked In, or these river terrace deposits. And in particular, the Wildcat and the Hooked In are prone to landsliding, high erosion rates, and produce silt and sand, which are considered fine sediment, and that's what's impairing beneficial uses in Elk. And with respect to land use, the bulk of the North Fork Elk River is made up of industrial timberlands, which is indicated by this dark green color. 98% is currently owned by Humboldt Redwood Company, with the lower 2% in rural residential. Similarly, on South Fork, the bulk of it, about 50%, is industrial timberlands, which is HRC and Green Diamond Resource Company. About a third of it, as indicated by this hash green slash marks, is part of the Headwaters Forest Reserve, and that's managed by Bureau of Land Management, and the lower portion is rural residential with some grazing. And then on the main stem, about a quarter of it is zoned for timber production, typically non-industrial timber production. And generally, along the valley, ag and grazing dominates for the main stem and Martin Slough along the valleys and riverside uses. The Martin Slough area is primarily comprised of higher density residential uses. This Martin Slough area and what's referred to as Humboldt Hill right over here. And the Humboldt County general plan, the current general plan, as well as the general plan update, which is currently underway, specifies this Martin Slough area and parts of Humboldt Hill as the focal point for growth. And they anticipate up to 8,000 new residences in Martin Slough. So we can expect development is upcoming. And part of our implementation program addresses that I'll speak to in a moment.
On the,
yes.
The white area at the very top, is that?
That is These data are based on Humboldt County's zoning, and they have not assigned any particular layer to that, and I haven't been able to rectify it quite yet. As far as I know, it's generally this rural residential, or excuse me, yeah, it's residential and more urbanized uses. It's the Cutton, which is kind of the south end of Eureka.
Maybe it's incorporated area, then. Is that possible?
I think it's actually outside of, it's part of county, it's outside of city.
Mm-hmm.
But it's effectively residential area.
Yeah, and they recently lost, Humboldt County recently lost their GIS staff person to the city of Santa Rosa. So I'm not sure how updates are going with their GIS layer, but that's a good catch. With respect to beneficial use impairment, the last time I was before you, I provided an overview of monitoring data. And based upon those results and additional information, we find that water supplies and fisheries habitat continue to be impaired. Generally speaking, the gravels are smothered by fines, and the pools are impaired by being filled with sediment. During the winter time, the suspended sediment concentrations tend to persist following storms for quite a time, limiting the ability for water drafting for domestic and ag supplies, as well as having the potential to damage equipment, and generally people need to do more frequent maintenance than historically on their equipment. Additionally, the exposure to these suspended sediment regimes indicate physiologic stress and limited feeding ability for salmonids, and we've been looking at juvenile salmonids as they're the most sensitive. In the summertime, due to the lack of pool storage, there's generally low flow conditions and stagnant conditions resulting in high tannins, low dissolved oxygen, and there's been an increase in aquatic growth, for example, like duckweed and other aquatic grasses. And referring back to those sediment water quality objectives I went over, like I said, the suspended sediment concentrations are limiting fisheries and water supplies. There's ongoing deposition of settleable material, further reducing the cross-sectional area and contributing to the ongoing nuisance flooding conditions. There's the suspended sediment loads where we have gauges are elevated over natural conditions, our surrogate there, and similarly turbidities are elevated over natural conditions, thus not meeting the numeric objective. And with respect to the source analysis, that's scheduled to go through internal review over the next couple of weeks. So these are preliminarily I'd like to present to you. We've broken things, for the purposes of this presentation especially, broken it into the upper watershed, the main stem, and Martin Slough, especially given the differences in land use and topography. The upper watershed generally, like I said, has the steep hill slopes, and it's a transport reach. It has transport reaches, and it's used for industrial timberland uses and the BLM Headwaters Forest Reserve. This area has been the focus of our regional board regulatory efforts since 1997, as many of you are very aware. And thus, as a result of that, we have extensive site-specific data that allows us to do analyses on a sub-basin scale for many of the photo periods. It also allows us to evaluate not just the past delivery, but potential future delivery from sources out there. And that's quite helpful in informing our ongoing cleanup efforts. So that'll also inform some of the more specifics of the implementation program. The dominant sources, based on our preliminary analyses, indicate that open slope landslides trump. There's controllable sediment discharge sites, roads, and channel extension as a result of change in runoff and compaction from tractors, as well as bank erosion are the dominant sources. On the main stem, the slopes are gentler with about 30% or so greater than 35% slopes. So they're gentler slopes. It's the depositional reach. It's where the sediment is settling out. Like I said, the land uses are rural residential and grazing predominantly. Because this area has not been the focus of our regulatory efforts, this is not the industrial timberlands, we have more limited, or much more limited on the site-specific data. But we do have a means of addressing those data deficiencies in our implementation program by through monitoring. But our preliminary results indicate that the dominant sources are controllable sediment discharge sites. And by those, I mean skid trail crossings that are remaining on the landscape, or fills that are threatened to fill volumes that are threatened to discharge into watercourses, and bank erosion and scour of the in-channel deposits. And lastly, on the source analysis for Martin Slough, again, this is the area of more gentler slopes. About 25% of it is greater than 35% slopes. Not to give you too many percentages in this statement, but and that's is the higher density residential and urban uses. Again, there's very little site-specific data available, but we have a means to address that in the future. But that said, our preliminary analyses indicate that the dominant sources are, again, controllable sediment discharge sites, roads, bank erosion, and channel scour. And with respect to how we're approaching load allocations, the TMDL must meet water quality standards and lead to recovery of beneficial uses in a defined time period. So for the natural loading, we have done extensive surveys in the Headwaters Forest Reserve, and that serves as an excellent surrogate for background conditions because there's portions of that that are undisturbed. With respect to the management sources, some of those are controllable and some are not controllable. Controllable sources, for example, could include these controllable sediment discharge sites, new sources, roads, but there's portions of the sediment budget that really are not so easily controlled, and I'm referring to those here as uncontrollable, and that includes this headward extension of a channel network, bank erosion, some of the persisting deep-seated landslides. And with respect to the margin of safety, it's generally based on uncertainty in the data sources and the resulting rates, loading rates. Now I'm going to describe the implementation program that staff's recommending. And generally speaking, it involves prioritizing actions based on the dominance of land uses and the associated sediment sources and potential for improvement, this controllable versus uncontrollable issue. And we recommend a suite of regulatory tools generally based in an approach of prevent discharges during planning and project planning and minimizing the remaining during project implementation. It's set to comply with the non-point source policy by specifying either WDR's waivers or prohibitions for the non-point source activities. And it's to include a schedule of, the schedule will include an implementation time schedule for these planning and minimization efforts. And I'm just going, these are specified in more detail in Appendix B to your EOSR. I'm just highlighting here the real big ones. And so first of all, referring back to the sediment prohibitions, like I said, the existing prohibitions only apply to logging construction and associated activities. And if you'll recall back in 2007, you heard staff proposed region-wide basin plan amendment, which would be the prohibition on discharge of excess sediment. And because that's not in place at this point, we are proposing that it be Elk River specific for this particular case to cover those land uses where there is no other regulatory coverage in terms of WDRs or waivers. And I'm going to get in the subsequent slides additional regulatory coverages that we're suggesting for land uses, and many of them are these conditional waivers. So the prohibition really would apply to residential uses primarily. And as you hopefully recall on this, the previously proposed prohibition, it specifies that new projects be planned and designed in a way to prevent sediment discharges and then minimized through project implementation by putting BMPs and mitigations in place. And it deals with existing sediment sources through a process of inventory, prioritization, treatment, and monitoring. And that sort of process is exactly what's happening on the timberlands and on BLM lands for those controllable sediment discharge sites. So it would be very consistent watershed-wide. And for the industrial timberlands, there are existing watershed-wide waste discharge requirements in place for Green Diamond Resource Company and Humboldt Redwood Company. We're recommending that these WDRs be revised once the TMDL is adopted to be consistent with the load allocations and also reflect the technical analyses. Mm-hmm. And we expect that would involve the development of a management plan, kind of the how and where of timber harvesting activities, road usage, and sediment source treatment, and would also specify prevention measures, which could include site treatment standards in terms of ground cover or canopy, tied back to the source analysis, some riparian protections for class 1, 2, and 3 water courses, use a mass wasting prevention strategy, which would point to a landslide hazard map that's being developed as part of this TMDL effort. And it could include something about timing of activities, you know, in terms of winter operations or stand conditions. And the effluent limitation should be consistent with the load allocations of the TMDL. And in terms of non-industrial timberlands, we're recommending a conditional waiver that could either be the existing regional waiver that this board recently adopted, or it could be Elk River specific. But again, it would need to address some of the same elements I just mentioned on the watershed-wide WDRs. And if landowners choose not to enroll under the conditional waiver, they could submit a report of waste discharge and to inform the development of either an individual or group WDR. But we're recommending a conditional waiver And similarly, for ag and grazing activities, we're recommending a conditional waiver that could either be regional, if that's where resources are spent in this office, to develop a regional approach, or it could be Elk River specific if there's no regional waiver developed in the same kind of time frame. But in either case, the approach would be consistent with the regional approach. And would likely need the require the development of a grazing plan, sort of a pollution prevention plan in term, non-point source terms, and be consistent with the non-point source policy. And that would involve the description of the land use activities, the site conditions, the quantity of waste and potential discharge routes, what sort of prevention and minimization measures would be implemented, and a monitoring program and a schedule for implementation. And again, if landowners elect not to enroll under the conditional waiver, they could submit a report of waste discharge to inform a group or individual WDR. And I would add that it's my understanding that surrounding the CEQA scoping meeting we had on May 20th up in Eureka, which I'm going to tell you a little bit about that soon, there were the non-industrial timber landowners and grazing landowners in Elk River were getting more organized and engaged. And so I've been told that they would be ready to work with us on the development of this waiver. And again, when it comes to the BLM Headwaters Forest Reserve, we're recommending a conditional waiver. They have an existing management plan that went through extensive public review. And that management plan lays out forest restoration for stand condition restoration towards old growth, treatment, inventory and treatment of existing sediment sources, and generally managing for fish and wildlife. And so we expect that their existing management plan will serve very well. As long as they're complying with their management plan, that could be a condition of the waiver. And then additionally, there are some large mass wasting features on their property that we've been talking to them about needing to investigate and propose a mitigation strategy for. But they're in pretty good shape, and they are definitely engaged also and have been quite helpful. And also, when we put all those sediment control measures in place that I just went over, we still have this issue of the stored sediment in the channel in Lower Elk River that's contributing to this nuisance flooding condition and the habitat impairment there and general lack of function of that ecosystem. And so, and considering the cohesive nature of the fine sediment there and the inability of the channel to contain scouring flows, it's unlikely that sediment's going to flush in the foreseeable future. You've heard about this before. And so it warrants focusing on that area. In order to recover beneficial uses and abate the nuisance conditions, there really needs to be an additional effort there beyond just the sediment control measures upslope. So staff has been pursuing the development of a Lower Elk River restoration and enhancement plan. And that has the objective of being a collaborative, scientifically based restoration strategy that identifies specific actions designed to hasten the recovery of beneficial uses of water and the ecosystem functions in that Lower Elk River. This project has kind of evolved over time, and we had a monitoring summit in June of 2008 that I described to you last time I was in front of you. And as an offshoot of that, there's an excellent technical advisory committee that was evaluating the conditions in Elk and trying to inform recovery trajectories. And following that monitoring summit, we asked them to identify the elements that should go into a restoration plan. And they were doing that, and then it turned into, well, how about we turn that into a funding proposal? And with Redwood Community Action Agency, they're a nonprofit based in Eureka. They were working, interfacing with the technical team. They developed a proposal that was submitted to Fish and Game in May of this year. And the proposal would have several phases, but basically it would identify potential restoration actions, build a suite of analytical and tools, and conduct monitoring to really characterize the existing conditions and project future trajectories with and without restoration actions. And basically the product would be a suite of preferred alternatives, the preferred alternatives, which is a suite of restoration actions. And so this, the record over and the course of my tenure here at the regional board, this has been brought up as a need a lot of a really well coordinated effort to come up with a good restoration plan that's not developed because of some litigation, which has been, you know, there's been a lot of studies over the years due to litigation, and they have different objectives than just restoration. So the record supports the need for this. We have broad partnership and cost shares we're bringing to the table. HRC has is involved with in-kind cost shares with their monitoring crews, as well as monetary cost shares. There's existing grants that also contribute to the funding. And if Fish and Game funds it, we'll find out in March of 2010. And if so, then the development of that plan would likely take 2 to 5 years, and thus, and then subsequent steps would be construction, design, permitting, and implementation, and that would not be before 5 to 10 years from now. And in order to kind of facilitate the what I would expect could be some very large-scale restoration actions, we're recommending some exemption criteria. There would be an EIR for this project, and we're recommending exemption criteria from our prohibitions to help facilitate the implementation of that. So, lastly, in terms of our implementation program recommendations, we're recommending that the area outside of the Eureka city limits that are rapidly urbanizing and adjacent to Eureka be designated as a phase two municipality and thus trigger MPDS coverage for that area and require the development of a stormwater management program, because Humboldt County doesn't currently have a stormwater management program for that area. They have one for McKinleyville, but so we're recommending that they develop one for this area, especially considering what we can anticipate in terms of development, urbanizing development, that is. And that stormwater management program would need to be consistent with the phase two MS4 permit and the TMDL action plan, and would expect that would need to address development of ordinances to control runoff from construction sites and an enforcement program, the development of incorporation of low impact development in community planning as well as individual projects, implementation of post construction BMPs, and a hydro modification analysis and control measures. And the Mona has been very helpful in this element of the
She's on vacation, yeah.
Yeah, good for her. Well-deserved vacation.
Apparently it's a very short vacation.
And similarly, the city of Eureka does have a stormwater program. It would just need to be revised to incorporate the elements I just mentioned. And truly lastly, on our implementation program, Humboldt County Roads, we are recommending a conditional waiver be developed, and this would be very consistent with a regional approach that has been discussed on how to deal with county roads. And so with that, I will offer you the update on the schedule. In May of 2009, this year, we released the preliminary drafts of the first two chapters to the public. They're available on our website. And we held a CEQA scoping period in May and June. As well included in that was a May 20th CEQA scoping meeting that was very well attended. And we have summarized the comments from that scoping, and that's Appendix C, Attachment C, to the EOSR, as well as we received comments on the draft chapters. And what you have does not reflect those comments yet. This month, we're providing you with this update, as well as we'll be I'll be wrapping up the analyses and we'll go through internal review of chapters 3 and 4 of the staff report. And then the first week in November, we're scheduled to send a peer review draft and of chapters 1 through 4. And Cali PA selected 4 peer reviewers with expertise in slip stability, water quality, fisheries, and they are excellent choices, and so pretty excited about that piece. On November 10th, we're scheduled to hold a public workshop up in Eureka to allow, have additional dialogue with stakeholders and give them updates on where we're at with our analyses. And then mid-November, I'm actually scheduled to take maternity leave.
All right.
And so I will be stepping away for a little while from this project. And we are due to receive, at which time it's my understanding that Matt St. John's unit will pick up the baton. And in February, the beginning of February, we're due to receive those peer review comments back, at which time they can be responded to and the draft chapters revised and then released to the public. So that's what I have for you today. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Okay. Thank you, Donna.
No, thank you.
Question, Mr. Corbett.
Yes, one is on your 2.5. You mentioned the regional board adopted beneficial uses in 2003 and they didn't make it to the table. And you correctly mentioned they still can be regulated. But isn't it time we updated the table as part of this process and incorporate that 2003 decision just to make it right? So I think it's an opportunity. The second, have we heard anything from Cal Fire? Where are they in all this?
I haven't heard from Cal Fire for any time recently, and we didn't receive any comments from them, and under CEQA scoping, and I don't recall anyone from their shop being at our May 20th meeting.
And then I noticed prioritization based upon economic utilization, and that's in one of your presentations. And one thing that I think was a major flaw in the prior permit was the failure to address roads, legacy roads, new roads. And, generally they create 70% of the sediment, especially when you have a watershed. Once it gets about 30% cut, you're going to have a road program to make it work. And the science panel, when they were queried, Of course, we got three different answers, but they were in the range of, all of them were above 50%, and I think it was 50 to 80%, somewhere in that range, which suggests that if we ignore that, and then, and this gets very hard because economic times are hard, and we've got to find some way to do it, and we can't load up on people without restraint. But if you do it by THP, and it's already primarily cut, you're not going to address the road problem for anywhere from 5 to 30, 40 years. So I think we have to have a road management program in order to meet the TMDL loads, and I don't see any way around it. In the next report, it'd be very good to educate me on the effects of residential development and the size and scope being proposed. I don't want to go through the heavy levels of regulation we have here only to have it undermined elsewhere. I did, and I want to thank you for keeping this whole thing moving, recognizing the local monitoring groups and also building on the monitoring summit. I also appreciated you notice that there are differences between the flatter lands towards the mouth and the upriver. And I know in the last deliberations we had seriously considered looking at ranch plans or some reasonable way for certification because I'm it's just a very low economic time period, and we've got to find some way to keep moving and at the same time not break the back of people. Mm-hmm. And so I would appreciate at least considering some of the existing hoops that people are already going through if we can and still meet our goals. And thank you for...
Mr. Hales.
Thanks, Adona. This is well put together and informative. I think kind of building off of John's question about the roads management question, we have a very high percentage in the watershed of industrial timber ownership, and we have to revise the existing WWDRs right now to fit in to meet the TMDL load allocations. Green Diamond, although a minor landowner, they've got their HCP and with their road management plan, and presumably I know that there's been conversation on how that plan can be more broadly permitted for their activities. Do you see that being a good, I mean, I'm assuming that that's already a step in the forward direction for dovetailing that in with what we need to do. And if so, is that something that might be a, that HRC would probably be on the heels of doing or as a pathway for them to fit that in for the WWDR?
Yeah, there has been definite issues with fish and game permitting, especially for 1600 permitting, of treating sediment discharge sites, for example, under our cleanup and abatement orders. If the sites aren't associated with a timber harvest plan, it's difficult for them to permit those sites. And so it's brought up issues of scheduling and making sure we stay on the track of treating sites that are a priority in the watershed versus what are associated with THPs. And so I've had extensive conversations with the Fish and Game staff in Eureka about this issue. They are, and I haven't gotten a status report recently, but they're working to develop a property-wide 1600 agreement with both Green Diamond and Humboldt Redwood Company. And we've talked to them about how our CEQA analyses could be conducted in a way that they could easily permit. And so we're really trying to acknowledge this permitting issue and make it easier for landowners so that we can actually treat what's at priorities. And with respect to the roads management plan, like I covered on the WDR slide for the industrial timber, we would expect the need for those landowners to develop a management plan for not just their timber harvesting and their roads and their sediment, for timber harvesting, roads, and sediment treatment. And so that should lay out what their roads management plan is, which roads they need to keep open, when, and how they're going to control sediment from those. And then that could potentially be associated with our WDR.
Yeah.
But that's largely, you know, up to the Timber Division, how that plays out.
Right. And getting back to what you said earlier about working in parallel with Fish and Game right now, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great. Any way that we can reduce redundancies and extending that beyond, you know, the industrial timber folks upstream, but to the private and non-industrial folks downstream.
Right.
If we can broaden that. Yes? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were flagging me. And I guess the third leg to that would be if we need to get CAL FIRE in there, like John had said as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can just tighten it all up so it just is more streamlined.
Yeah, yeah. And there was an effort on Bear Creek and the you know, we were looking at developing a watershed-wide WDR for Bear Creek, and there was we were looking at how to develop a more comprehensive plan that could serve all these different agencies. I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but there's a definite need, and so, yeah, thanks.
Mr. Corbett.
Yeah, I just want to build on it. You know, there has been for incidental take permits, Fish and Game has gone to programmatic, stream bed alterations, and if it's carefully done, the same regs can work from the TMDL to the Fish and Game, and certainly if we can do it for an ITP, we can do it for a habitat conservation plan. So.
Okay, I don't have any speaker cards, but come on up.
Thank you.
Just pop it down. It'll.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board and staff, good afternoon. My name is Andy Westfall. I live in Ferndale, Humboldt County. I'm an Elk River landowner and vice chair of the Elk River Landowners Group. Quite frankly, we are more than puzzled over this whole TMDL process and what is to be our role in developing this plan. Going back to the May 20th scoping meeting in Eureka, our members left that evening confused and concerned about the objectivity of the process. This was due largely to staff presenting what seemed to us an illogical sequence of steps. Basically, the problem, as described in Chapter 2, was presented at the same time as the solution, as described in the draft implementation plan. And yet, how agriculture might be affecting the problem is slated for Chapter 3, which is yet to be drafted. How can we rationally go about fixing the problem when the causes of the problem have yet to be clearly defined? Our concern is that the regulatory requirements have been predetermined, even though there is not a source analysis available to justify these regulations. This leads us to wonder that the source analysis, Chapter 3, might be drafted to support the implementation plan rather than the implementation plan being based on the conclusions of the source analysis. In spite of all this, we were somewhat encouraged that our group was at least recognized by staff and that there was an expressed interest to work collaboratively with us. We submitted written comments prior to the June 22nd deadline, but have heard nothing from staff since the May 20th meeting. During this time, there were two phone calls to staff initiated by us that were sluggishly returned and provided no substantive information about how and when this process would go forward. So far, that has been the extent of the collaboration. And now this meeting. None of us in the landowner group or the Farm Bureau received notice of this workshop. This event wasn't even posted on the Elk River TMDL website. True, this same workshop has been scheduled for Eureka on November 10th, but it will not be before the board. The board needs to hear directly from the folk who were unable to attend this meeting for the reasons cited. Therefore, we respectfully request that as many board members as possible attend the Eureka workshop. In the meantime, we would like to receive the calendar, whether fixed or proposed, outlining the remainder of the process. This is necessary for our meaningful engagement. Also, our group is working on a proposal to present to the board and staff, and we need to know what the timing of that presentation might be. I have tried to choose my words carefully to clearly and directly state our issues, while at the same time restating in a positive way our sincere desire to contribute to the final product. We maintain that genuine collaboration has the greatest potential to create policy that is balanced and successfully addresses environmental and economic concerns. We look forward to hearing from you, really. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Andy.
I just had one comment. I wanted to strongly encourage you to come up with a proposal. One of the challenges we have is you know on the ground better than we know on the ground. I mean, when you're living there, farming there, et cetera. And I think that'd be really constructive, and then it really gets a dialogue going. So I want to encourage you.
Thank you. That's our intention.
Hey, Ruth Ann Schulte.
Hello again. Good afternoon, Chair Anderson and board members. I'm Ruth Ann Schulte, Executive Director for the Buckeye. As a reminder, we have about 150 members or so representing hundreds of thousands of acres in Humboldt County, some of those in Elk River. The Buckeye is an education-based organization that is known for working together constructively on issues. Andy just spoke from the Elk River landowners group. We're prepared to support that group in the Elk River TMDL in any reasonable way that we can. The Buckeye has been tracking the Elk River TMDL because we're interested not only in what's happening in that watershed, but also the potential implications beyond Elk River. We have a few procedural concerns thus far, too. First, a lack of notification, and second, the order in which the TMDL is being conducted. Regarding notification, I knew to be here today to listen to the workshop, which was very helpful, because I happen to track the board agendas. But landowners are busy conducting their daily business. If they're interested in an issue, they'll track just that one issue. So let's look at it from the landowner's perspective. If I attended the Elk River TMDL scoping meeting in May and registered my contact information on the sign-in sheet, and if I checked the board's Elk River TMDL website, I would think I was pretty well informed on what was happening in the process, but that's not the case. If I did only those two things, I wouldn't have known that this was being presented today. None of the interested parties who signed in at the May 20th meeting that I spoke to received any notification that this workshop was to occur. In addition, there's no mention of either this workshop or the November 10th workshop on the Elk River TMDL website. Obviously, this is concerning to us because people want to engage in the process and they're not being adequately informed. Another process concern we have is there seems to be a missing piece. In problem solving, one would logically identify the problem, figure out what caused the problem, and then address the source of the problem. As was mentioned, Chapter 2 identifies the problem in the Elk River TMDL. And that's been released. Chapter 3, which is slated to identify the sources of the problem, has not yet been released. Yet the implementation framework, which outlines the fix to the problem, has begun to be developed even before the sources have been identified. We don't understand how the answer to a problem can be developed when the sources have yet to be identified. In summary, we request two things. First, that all information pertinent to the Elk River TMDL be posted to the Elk River TMDL website so people who are tracking the issue can be well informed on the current status. And second, that interested parties be notified when there are meetings on the Elk River TMDL. As I mentioned earlier, the Buckeye stands ready to assist in this process. The landowners want to be engaged. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Okay, thank you, Ruth Ann. Anyone else care to address this? Yeah.
Just briefly, with respect to notification, prior to the May 20th meeting, I worked with Clerical to, we had a database of, that came from the county parcels in Elk River that served as our Elk River mailing list, plus a bunch of other additional interested parties from when we started this process. And there was thousands of names on there. We needed to pare it down to save paper and, you know, reflect changes in people's addresses and in levels of interest. We sent out a notification of that CEQA scoping process to, I believe, 2,300 parties, a hard copy, and said, if you want, we're switching over to primarily a Lyris-based email notification, and if you would like to stay on a hard copy mailing list, please return this form. And so I believe now we have about 180 people on the email and some number that I can't tell you right now on the hard copy. And it was my understanding that the agenda notice for this meeting was getting sent not just to the board meeting mailing list, but also to the Elk River. So it was absolutely our intention to ensure that everyone who was interested in Elk and had identified themselves were informed of this. And you're right, the November 10th meeting is not on our website yet because we've been finalizing the time and working through the details. I did send a Lyris update referring to the agenda page. So I'm sorry if it appears we're not notifying. It was absolutely our intention to do so.
You know, one suggestion, you might want to just send a reminder letter to the Farm Bureau, landowner groups, and the other stakeholders that this has occurred and we think we're missing some people, and see whether they can get some people to get in contact with you.
And then with regards to the order of operations of release of products, given that CEQA scoping, we were scoping the Basin Plan Amendment, which is the action plan, and that is the implementation program, essentially. And so it was a little odd to release that prior to getting through the source analysis, but that was necessary because that's what we were scoping. And I know it caused some confusion. We got a lot of comments on that. I don't know how to avoid that. We tried to clarify the reasoning, but so I acknowledge this. Thank you.
Okay. This is a workshop. Board members have any other questions, or we're not taking action today, or Mr. Hale?
I guess it would just be, you know, we do have Mr. Westfall and Ms. Schulte here, and we have a group of residents and landowners willing to participate and engage and want to be engaged. And so let's, just make sure we're getting the notifications out and just double checking on that. Clearly it's, you know, they're a valuable resource and an asset and want to work with us, and no better opportunity to take that, but we've got to make sure they get the information. Thanks.
And what is the state of the documents and going to peer review? I guess that's my question. What are peer reviewers reviewing it?
Peer reviewers will be sent the first four chapters, and like I said, chapter 3 and chapter 4, the source analysis and the implementation, those are being written as we speak and going through internal review over the next few weeks. So they'll get the first four chapters, and there's specific questions that we ask them to look at the scientific basis for.
All right, and then we see those comments by the schedule in February, is that?
That's when we get those comments.
They'll be ripe and ready for the March 3rd meeting then. All right. And one on the fish and game grant application. Mm-hmm. Is that for restoration work? Is that for planning for restoration work? Or what kinds of?
It's for developing the restoration plan. Identifying what the suite of actions that will help to recover this, the function of that lower watershed. Not, it does not include implementation because we don't know what to implement yet.
All right. Anyone else? Okay, that's it on this item then.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. We heard you. All right. We have...